All right, we are literally a minute to the closing bell. Helping us digest the action of today's markets, Bill Baruch, Blue Line Futures President, as well as Chris Zaccarelli, Independent Advisors Alliance. Let's take a look at where the markets could potentially settle today. You can see the Dow is going to be off about 94 points. But within the last hour and a half, we've watched the S&P 500, not dramatically, but it has gone into positive territory, up roughly 2 points. And then you've got the NASDAQ, which is up roughly 6 points. When we take a look at all of this and consider where we have been, it's not necessarily a recovery from yesterday, but the sector action, we see consumer staples approaching gains of about 1%. Healthcare is going to be up 0.5%, and information technology also up about 1%. When you consider that we have watched a sell-off in the Dow, it is relief at least to see the S&P 500 making some gains. But right now, we're going to take a look at where these markets settle because we have a closing bell for you right now.
All right, and that is the closing bell today on Thursday, August 19th. We're taking a look at the markets, the S&P 500 narrowly eking out a close in positive territory. This is the first time we've seen a gain in three sessions. The Dow, though, holding on to those losses that we saw earlier on during the earlier part of the session, and the NASDAQ also in positive territory. Now, as Adam was mentioning, we are seeing the information technology and real estate sectors leading to the upside. And then if we take a look at the Dow components, the components really weighing on this index were Boeing, Chevron, as well as Caterpillar. But I want to turn back to our panel now for some reaction on the markets. Bill, I'll toss this first question over to you first. So we take a look at the market action that we've had today, a little bit of volatility here in the past 24 hours, really. Do you think this is all really driven by the Fed, those minutes, and the anticipation of tapering?
That is one catalyst that cannot be ignored. Obviously, you know, we saw selling come after the minutes into the close yesterday. But what I've been calling this in my letters to clients in the recent days, going back to last week, is buyer's exhaustion and how we were approaching buyer's exhaustion towards the end of last week. I mean, the S&P, I think, gained about 0.5% on the week last week and set new record highs for four straight sessions and then a fifth on Monday. And, you know, we've seen these big moves that were buyers step in and really take the market. Now, another component too is sort of this gamma move and where you have dealers that are, we broke 4,400 yesterday, selling to the downside and adding to that that pressure. And then, you know, as conversely, today buying to the upside. So you get these massive swings similar to what we saw on Monday. So there's a number of things at work here, but obviously, in the background and not going away is that whole macro theme. And what is the Fed policy move? When are they going to move on tapering?
Chris, I want to ask a question that may sound sophomoric because we can have all these discussions about tapering and Fed policy. But at the end of the day, most of us as investors are saying, how can I make money in this market? And despite the volatility right now, a lot of analysts are telling us S&P 500 will end this year around 5,000. And if you're looking right now at some of the Dow winners today, I mean, Cisco Systems, United Healthcare, Microsoft, Procter & Gamble, all up, despite the Dow being off. So how do you answer that question for your clients as to what should they be considering and ignoring the volatility?
Well, for our clients, you know, we're always looking to have them go more long term. So, you know, their asset allocation is really important. Whether or not they have an investment plan and how they stick to it will matter a lot more than day-to-day movements in the stock market. But in general, in a market like this, where we're going to see some volatility potentially heading into the fall, whether it's options expiration tomorrow, taper announcement over the next couple of months, there's always going to be some news that moves the markets. Unless we're heading into a recession, which we don't believe, you really want to stick with the market. So for that reason, a lot of the defensiveness that we're seeing right now could lead to some weakness in the market, and we would be more aggressive. We would be buying the dips. We'd be moving into more cyclical sectors. We think the economy is strong. We're having a little bit of setback due to Delta, and I think there are some jitters in the market due to some of those macro factors. But in general, sticking with your investments and potentially buying the dip and moving into cyclicals are different ways that you can take advantage of the current weakness in the market and make some money in the short run.
Bill, on the topic of crude oil, you mentioned that crude, of course, moved lower following those FOMC meeting minutes. We saw WTI crude moving down another 2% today. What's your outlook on the energy front? And with this risk-off move that we're seeing, when do you expect to maybe see a little bit of a bounce back here?
We are getting a little bit of a bounce back here this afternoon. Crucial technical level, 62.5, 62.90. And the market did respond to it, although really, really delayed, I mean, relative to what the equity market did. The Fed, I think they came off more hawkish than the meeting itself at the end of July, only because you're now interpreting these minutes with the July payroll report early in August. So if they're going to taper, essentially they're going to slow growth, and you're already seeing growth get revised lower. I mean, Goldman Sachs today slashed growth. So with that being said, lower growth is going to weigh on the demand landscape and things like crude oil. And that was where we saw crude take that nosedive. I think some technical levels were also triggered below 65 late yesterday. But at the end of the day, very upbeat on crude long term. And I think this is really going to prove to be a tremendous buying opportunity, you know, into 62.5 and maybe into 60 if we happen to go there. I think, and I'm welcoming these growth estimates being slashed, because I think as we move GDP estimates move into 5.5 as they are now, and then maybe 4.5 if they keep going lower, then I think we can really surprise to the upside. And a lot, there's many stocks, individual names, as well as commodities that are going to perform very well on the heels of such a move in growth.
Chris, I want to keep talking about what could, you know, be a problem for growth, because everyone seems to say, and now I'm going to go to the wonky discussion, which people dislike, but inflation. And yet we're watching profit margins when we saw the earnings in this quarter just growing and growing. And you don't see that slowing down at any point.
We don't. We think what you're seeing with profit margins is just the beginning of the story. It's part of the recovery. It's part of what's been happening in the economy. And if anything, Delta has slowed it down. It slowed down the growth in the short run. And if you look at those Goldman Sachs estimates, they reduce estimates for 2021, but then they increase estimates for 2022. I think there's a pretty broad consensus amongst people who are looking very closely at the data that we're getting a slowdown, a temporary slowdown, and then things will resume back up again. Same thing can happen with corporate profits. As customer spending slows down a little bit in the short run, but then picks right back up, like what we've seen up until Delta became more of a concern recently, as sales expand and those fixed costs can be spread over larger amounts of revenues, in reality, you actually get profit margins increasing. So we think that operating leverage in a lot of these corporations and a lot of what you saw in really Q2 could propel the stock market more in Q4 or even Q1 of next year as those profit margins start to expand once revenues come back. But we are in a little bit of a slowdown period. We just believe that that's a temporary slowdown. We don't believe this is a permanent slowdown.
All right, we want to pause on this conversation with our panel and head back over to the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. We have Yahoo Finance's Jared Blickery standing by with a breakdown of earnings results from Applied Materials. Jared, what were the results?
That's right. And first of all, the stock has been both positive and negative, fluctuating around the settlement price. So here are the numbers. It was a beat on both the top and bottom lines for the third quarter. Adjusted EPS coming in at $1.90 versus $1.06 a year ago, and higher by 13 cents than the Wall Street estimate of $1.77. Net sales, $6.2 billion. That's up 41% year over year. The estimate was for lower at $5.94 billion. Now, their biggest segment, semiconductor systems, that revenue came in at $4.45 billion, beating the estimate of $4.26 billion. And just give one more segment here. Applied Global Services net sales $1.29 billion, and the estimate was slightly lower, $1.23 billion. Really all about the outlook, and they do have a rosy outlook. They have raised their EPS forecast for the current quarter, the fourth quarter, to $1.87 to $2.01, and that is much higher than the median of $1.81. So good news there for them. Finally, adjusted gross margin came in at 48% versus 45% a year ago, and slightly higher than the estimate of 47.7%. And I got a quote from the CEO and President Gary Dickerson. He said Applied Materials delivered record performance as long-term trends fueled by the digital transformation of the economy drive strong secular demand for the semiconductors. Again, the stock has been both positive and negative, but beats on both the top and bottom lines, guys.
Jared, thank you. Let's get back to Bill. I wanted to follow up on something. You may have hit upon this. Forgive me if I missed it. But when you talked about the close for today for the S&P 500 being important, can you put into perspective why we want to pay attention to the level where it's at? Because you've been talking with us and sharing with us some of the support levels and what we need to pay attention to.
Yeah, they're more so as the day developed and we had this big move off the overnight lows. we had a resistance level, resistance pocket, if you will, that 44.11 in the S&P futures up to about 44.17. And it stayed really contained there. I think that really aligned as well with the lows from earlier in the week. So far, this really sharp snapback from the overnight lows has been contained. And we're settling in right at 4,400 going into this options expiration tomorrow. So, I think this consolidation there. But at the end of the day, we really didn't repair any damage that began yesterday. So I think the market remains vulnerable. The NASDAQ stayed below 15,000. That was another technical level, really, to be specific, 14,997 we've been watching. And then you look at the small caps remaining very weak, basically finishing near the lows of the overnight session. So, I mean, there's definitely corrections that are taking place, through these indices, maybe not just so much in the S&P itself, but cyclicals, obviously, there's a lot of names and the small caps are exuding that correction more than anything, any of the other indices.
Chris, you were talking a bit about profit margins being likely to increase, especially among major S&P 500 companies. But as we continue to hear companies talking about raising compensation costs, port congestion, supply chain constraints, and other material shortages, are these conversations and are these remarks that you're listening to with any concern as it relates to potential earnings power for companies going forward?
Well, without a doubt, supply issues, supply chain issues, and pricing pressure in the short run, that is going to have an impact on margins. It's something we're watching closely, and it's something that we would be very concerned about if we believe that to be persistent. So if the supply chain issues are something that are going to be with us for a long period of time, then I think that would probably dent our thesis. But the idea that the supply chain issues will get worked out over time and where there's less capacity, more capacity will be built, and where we can get through some of these supply chain issues that maybe are COVID related, I think some of those will dissipate and that'll be less of a concern. So for us, supply chain does matter, but we think, again, it's more of a short-term story, not a longer-term story. What we do think is going to help with profit margins is, despite the fact that there are some costs going higher within consumers, on the one hand, there are a number of companies in the S&P 500 that are going to see their labor costs increase. But for the most part, a lot of companies in the S&P 500, especially the largest companies in the S&P 500, they're not dealing with minimum wage workers or lower wage workers. For the most part, those are knowledge workers that are already being paid very well. We don't think the cost pressures are going to be coming for those people who are more of your white collar workers. It's going to be more along people in those service jobs and people who are making closer to minimum wage. So for that portion of the index that has higher pricing pressure in terms of wages, that will be a concern for that part of the index. But if you look at the index construction, it's much more heavily weighted towards technology, communication services, less so towards labor. And so for that reason, we think at an index level, that won't be as much of a concern as that may be for individual companies per se.
Chris Zaccarelli is the CIO at Independent Advisor Alliance, and Bill Baruch is Blue Line Futures president. We hope both of you guys will come back soon.